Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and I'm extra excited. I'm always excited on Monday when we get to start up doing this again, but it's Martin Luther King Day here in the United States of America. And that means that probably some people are listening who haven't listened before because they've been at work and they got the day off today. So if this is your first time, welcome. You want to find out more about us, you can find out all about us at Catholic.com. Not very hard to remember, Catholic.com. What do? We just answer questions about the Catholic faith. And this hour, we're going to talk about being persuasively pro-life. I would like to be more persuasive as a pro-life person. Maybe you would too. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. I don't have to get to Trent Horn levels to be effectively pro-life, but I'd like to get closer to Trent Horn levels than I currently am at. It's very fortunate then that our guest is Trent Horn. Hi, Trent.
Hello, Cy.
You wrote a book called Persuasive Pro-Life.
Mm-hmm. This is correct.
You wrote a book called Answering Atheism.
That is also correct.
You wrote a book called Why We're Catholic.
Three for three. You're batting 1,000.
So if I didn't know anything, I was just judging by the book titles, I'd say that you believe in God, that you're a pro-life Catholic. That's what I would guess if I were just judging by the titles of some of your books.
Or I am a depraved individual who just is good at writing on those things and would build a platform through that. No, of course not. No, I affirm what the Catholic Church teaches, and I want to teach other people how to defend it. Pro-life apologetics is where I kind of cut my teeth as an apologist. And so I went out and dialogued with students on university campuses, grew my Catholic apologetics from that. Now I want to help other people. So if you have a question about how to defend the pro-life position, excuse me.
Let me give you the number.
About how to defend them, go ahead and give us a call. If you happen to be pro-choice, whatever that word means to you, we'll bump you to the front of the line because I enjoy dialoguing with people who have a wide variety of views. For example, on my podcast, The Council of Trent, I aired today an episode with Dr. Stephen Millies. He is a public theologian with the Bernardin Center. He is a fellow Catholic, but we disagree about Roe v. Wade. He thinks that there can be a Catholic case for Roe versus Wade. You might find that highly implausible. I do. And you can see the vigorous yet charitable discussion we had about that today on my channel. You can go to Council of Trent on YouTube or search for it wherever you can find podcasts and other good things like that. You can definitely go and check that out.
If you want to call here, 888-318-7884. What's a public theologian? Like he just goes out in public
and
theologizes?
Yeah, it's a term that I was not as familiar with, but he does not have a degree in theology. He has a degree, I believe, in sociology or political science, yet he is studied Catholic theology and looks at the intersection of theology and public policy, like, let's say, legislation outlawing abortion or things like that. I don't even know if I prefer, I don't think I don't like the term public theologian, how it's being articulated there. I'd rather say he's like a theological social scientist or something like that. Mm-hmm. I would say to be a theologian, you must have a licentiate or a sacred theology doctorate or go through old school and just be a church father or something like that, you know?
Well, actually, Irenaeus doesn't
have a sacred theology doctorate, so we can't say he's a theologian.
It's because the Catholic Church hadn't invented academic degrees yet because we hadn't yet invented the university.
Yeah, we still needed about 1,300 years. Well, from the time of Irenaeus, about 1,200 years, 1,200 years to do that.
888-318-7884. Of course, the phones are going to be full. This month marks the anniversary of the Roe versus Wade decision here in the United States. And I think most people around the world, I'm saying these things that are very American. Martin Luther King, I think everybody knows who Martin Luther King Jr. is. And I think most people know what the Roe versus Wade decision is. But if you don't, that's the decision that made it illegal to make abortion illegal in any state of the United States. It took all the power away from the states, gave it to the federal government in one decision and about to be overturned quite possibly this year, even though we've lived with it for decades. And so that's part of the reason we want to do this persuasive pro-life program right now, because we're at that anniversary time of the Roe versus Wade decision. Let's start with Megan in Wisconsin, watching on YouTube. Megan, we're very happy to have you. Thank you for your call. Go ahead with your question for Trent Horn. Wait, hang on, Megan. I All right, go ahead, Megan.
Hi, Trent. My question is, how do we talk to people about defending the lives of those on death row? I know a lot of people who are pro-life in the case of abortion, but you ask them about capital punishment and you find out that, you know, they're all for it. So how do we talk to people about, you know, the sanctity of their life as well?
Sure. And I think here you can point to the Catholic Church's teaching on that issue, which can be found in the Catechism's revised paragraph on the death penalty. Excuse me, I had something in my throat there. What you'd want to do is to say, look, every human being has intrinsic dignity, and this dignity is not lost no matter what we do. Now, there has been some debate about this in theology going back several centuries, but the church affirms that a person's dignity cannot be lost through any action that they take. So even committing a very, very grave and serious crime, you do not lose your human dignity, and you still have a right to life like anyone else. If people on death row lost their dignity because they committed a grave crime, then they could be morally justified to make their execution very painful and torturous, to forcibly convert them before death, even if they don't want to convert. All hosts of things could happen if you deny people have their intrinsic dignity, something that can't be lost through their own actions. So these are human beings like the rest of us. And so looking at what the church teaches on the death penalty, to say that there's been a development in the understanding of how the state should use its power to punish, to protect society, that, you know, centuries ago or a thousand years ago, the death penalty might have been used in a wide variety of cases, not just for things like murder, but for grand theft. There's an old saying, I think, from post-medieval Europe that said, criminals are not hung for stealing horses, but so that horses won't be stolen. So the idea here is that there was a time when it was considered justified to use the death penalty to deter all kinds of crimes, not just murder. But we've developed in our understanding of how it ought to be applied in the modern state to say, well, you know, even, you know, grand theft might be a big pain, but we don't hang people for stealing horses or cars. You could even be horribly executed. I didn't want to say the way that happened in Europe back when this happened, for hunting game on the Lord's land. I don't know if this is apocryphal or not, but I will say that someone who did that could be thrown in a sack and then thrown in a pit and then be like chewed up by dogs and stuff. So my point is that we've developed our understanding of how the death penalty should be applied, and the church has developed with that to narrower and narrower cases where it might be justified. Up until after the Second Vatican Council, we see, looking at the modern state, Pope St. John Paul II said that it would only be reserved in very, very rare cases where society there are no other bloodless means to protect society, things like that. And now Pope Francis has further pushed it in that direction to say the death penalty is inadmissible. It's something that may have been done in the past, but it should not be done anymore in the future. There's a little write-up on that in Mark Brumley's wonderful 20 Answers booklet on Catholic social teaching. So maybe we could send you a copy of Mark Brumley's 20 Answers Catholic Social Teaching. It has a great little write-up on the death penalty in there. But I would just focus on that, the dignity of the person, and that we should always strive, that if we should always strive for as many nonviolent means as possible to protect innocent people, that we want nonviolence for everyone, except in situations where there really is no other option, like killing in self-defense or things like that. So thank you so much for calling, Megan, and I hope that was helpful for you.
Thanks, Megan. Got to take a quick break. Thank you very much for starting us off. Persuasive Pro-Life this hour with Trent Horn, 888-318-7884, the number 888-318-7884. Next hour, Dr. Marcellino D'Ambrosio, one of our very favorite guests, will be here, and we're going to talk about friendship with Jesus. So that's pretty good. That's a pretty good start to a Monday. That book that we mentioned before that Trent wrote, Persuasive Pro-Life, you can have it at just $5 a copy when you buy it in bulk. So if it's a book that you might want to share with the parish or with your study group or with the family, $5 a copy when you buy it in bulk right now at shop.catholic.com.
Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
The EWTN home video highlight for January is Life Journey with Sean Carney. 40 Days for Life founder Sean Carney profiles those who have personally confronted the abortion issue themselves and chose life. Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
Answers Live, persuasive pro-life this hour. You're welcome to call if you're not a pro-life person. If you have questions or you want to challenge something, you're welcome to call 888-3187-884. But perhaps you are a pro-life person and you just like some help explaining it to someone or covering a point of dispute with someone, 888-3187-884. Trent Horn is our guest. In addition to his many other books, he is the author of Persuasive Pro-Life, one of the best books on figuring out how to be persuasive when you talk about the pro-life issue. Trent, ready to go to another call?
Let's do it.
All right, let's go to New York. Bill in New York is listening on the Catholic Answers app. Bill, thanks for downloading the app onto your phone. Go ahead with your question for Trent.
You're welcome. Well, good evening, Si and Trent. I have a question for Si, for Trent, is that do you believe in a literal hell, a burning hell, not a separation of hell, but a real actual burning hell?
I believe that hell is eternal separation from God. And so I believe that it will be what the Catechism defines it, I think it's around paragraph 1035, that it says the chief punishment of hell is eternal separation from God. So I just know that the punishment in hell will be that it's unending. A person will be apart from God for all eternity. Will it involve, when you say burning, I'm assuming you mean some kind of literal fire. I'm not sure. It could be that. It could be something else. It could be some kind of torment that is worse than immolation. I'm not sure. So I don't know if there is literal fire, but I do believe hell does exist, and it's the worst thing that could happen to you. It's unending, and it's separation from God.
Well, that's a fun topic. Thanks. Bill, I'm going to leave it there because it's a little bit off topic today, actually, but we're always happy to take your call.
I don't know if there was just the preface to the question.
Oh, you think there might be more? Okay. Well, I mean,
perhaps there was.
Okay. Because I got myself all worked up because I thought he was asking me a question. Then, of course not. He went for Trent. But was that the preface, Bill, or did you have a follow-up?
That was the preface, yeah.
Oh, I apologize. I misunderstood. Yeah. Go ahead.
That's fine. Go ahead.
Yeah. If God is the sovereign God, knows all, Alpha and Omega, right? Christ called himself Alpha and Omega, beginning and the end, because I know Greek a little bit. And so then why should a child be born in the womb and then be born to fruition, birth, if God is going to send that person to hell anyway? I mean, why make the child be born and cause suffering for the mother and others? It doesn't make any sense, Trent. I mean, if you look at it, a sovereign God who knows everything from beginning to end, letting someone be born only to go to hell. I mean, for him to put somebody in hell.
It sounds like, Bill, your question is not so much about abortion as it is about hell. Because if your argument or question is, should we abort children who will go to hell, that argument doesn't make sense because, one, they would go to hell anyways. So how does that help the person to deprive them of earthly life? In their earthly life, they might have a chance to repent. But number two, you couldn't possibly know whether an unborn, you as a human being couldn't know if an unborn child was going to heaven or hell or not. And of course, number three, human beings don't have the right to take life. That's something that belongs to God alone. So a person's fate, whether they're going to go to heaven or hell, doesn't change whether it should be legal or illegal to kill him or her. So it sounds like to me, correct me if I'm wrong, this isn't about abortion for you. You're just saying God should not create people who will end up in hell. Is that what you're wondering about?
It is attached to the abortion issue because, I mean, it's better to not have the child be born, to abort the child, okay, than to let a sovereign, loving God, so-called sovereign, loving God, send that person to hell at the fruition of their life. It doesn't make much sense to me.
Well,
that's where the abortion comes in.
Let me jump in. It sounds like if I could restructure your argument more, we'll try another track. Sorry, let me take another response to your argument. It sounds like what you're saying is this your argument? It would be better to abort children because they will go to heaven than if they are born, they might go to hell. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, that God knows the beginning of the end. He's sovereign, right? Okay? And he knows whoever's going to be born is going to go either heaven or hell. So
right.
If he knows that, and the child is born, then he or she lives their life to fruition.
Yeah.
So what, 3 score years and 10 on the average, and they go to hell, and time for judgment, and he puts them into hell. Then
they put themselves
there. A good life to begin with.
They choose to put themselves in hell through their own actions.
But he has the final judgment. He has the final word. Jesus has, doesn't he? God has the final word on who's going to go to heaven and who's going to go to hell.
Well, Bill, let me ask you this. Do you think God should make people go to heaven who don't want to go there?
Well, I don't know. The question is if those people feel that they don't want to go there. I don't think anybody in their right mind would say, do you want to go to hell? If you ask anybody out in the street, do you want to go to hell? Of course they're going to say, I don't want to go to hell. So I don't think
they
really
want to
go there.
Well, let me ask you this, Bill. Bill, if you asked people, most people, do you want to commit evil? Do most people say no?
Yeah, well, what did you define as evil now? I mean, evil has a broad connotation to it.
Well, I think most people know what evil is. If you ask people, hey, do you want to do evil? Do you want to do wrong? Do you want to hurt others? Most people say no, but then their actions are totally different. They still choose to do those things. And so people can be held accountable for their actions. And God gives us a freedom in either choosing to spend eternal life with him or not. It is a great gift with a solemn responsibility to it. And God will judge people based on their culpability, their maturity, what they have been given, their knowledge of salvation through Jesus Christ or not. So since this is off topic from abortion, we're going to have to move on to some other callers. But if you want to call back for Tuesday, Thursday open forum, we'd be happy to address the topic more there. But I do want to keep the focus just on persuasive pro-life today. So thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks, Bill. I hope we will talk with you again. The number is 888-318-7884. It's persuasive pro-life today with Trent Horn this hour anyways. Next hour, Dr. Marcellino D'Ambrosio will be here, and we're talking about friendship with Jesus. 888-318-7884. We go now to Tom in New Jersey, listening also on the Catholic Answers app. Thanks for downloading the app, Tom. Go ahead with your question for Trent.
Hello, guys.
Hi, Tom.
Hope you had a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, all that.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. You too. I hope you did.
We did. Yeah. Good to speak with you again, Tom.
Okay, thank you. So, there, in ethics, you may have heard there's a discussion about innocent aggressors, which this sometimes makes its way into the abortion debate. So, you may have heard this before. Bob is at a party. Fred slips a drug into Bob's drink when he's not looking. Bob drinks it, and then he starts hallucinating. Fred then places a gun into Bob's hands, and
right.
Bob starts pointing the gun at people, and it looks like he's about to shoot people. I'm not entirely sure, but it looks to me like he's going to shoot people. I think in that case, many people are going to say, I would be justified in pulling out my gun and shooting Bob, even though he's
right.
completely innocent, and I don't even know whether he's going to kill me in the first place. But still, the risk that he's going to kill me means I could shoot him. So people will bring that over to pregnancy. They'll say, even in the healthy, normal pregnancies, there's still that risk that the woman's going to die. Like she might feel like someone is pointing a gun at her, like she's at the party and Bob is pointing a gun. Right. And they'll say, she can therefore kill that fetus because the fetus is an innocent aggressor. It sounds silly, I know, but some people will say, will actually give that as an argument. So how would you respond to that?
So what I would say here is that a person has the right to defend their life against a threat. It could be a conscious, malicious threat to their lives. It could be an unconscious threat to their lives. So, you know, whether it's a rock slide, a mountain lion, or a person who is not conscious that they're doing wrongdoing. So it could be someone who is on drugs, who is hallucinating. You don't even have to go that far for an example. We could point to, let's say, someone who is schizophrenic, who has a schizophrenic episode. And they think you are trying to kill them. And so they try to kill you. It's not their fault. They are acting, so they're not morally culpable. They're having a schizophrenic episode where they're acting irrationally and could cause harm to others. And in those cases, lethal force would be justified only under specific circumstances. So that would mean under the cases where no other non-lethal option is possible, and where the threat is proximate and it's immediate. That's what I think would be important here. So this argument about the innocent aggressor, it's only going to work. Well, I don't think it's that. Well, where it would work. It's only in a case where the woman's life is in proximate danger, immediate danger, if you will. Like, let's say she has an ectopic pregnancy, and if the child continues to grow in her fallopian tube, she will die as a result from that. You can't say, well, some pregnancies turn out to have a fatal result for the mother. Therefore, the mother can kill the unborn child for any reason, because there is a non-zero chance the pregnancy will result in her death. That argument won't work, because you could say women have a non-zero chance that they will be killed by their husbands, right? Women are, you know, it's not uncommon that women are killed by their husbands. That does happen. It's a terrible, tragic thing when it does, but it wouldn't give a wife the right to shoot her husband just because it's possible he might kill her. Some children grow up to murder their own parents. It doesn't mean you have the right to kill your born child, because they might grow up and kill you. So the threat has to be immediate. Otherwise, the lethal force is not justified. So then if you look at a case of something like ectopic pregnancy, something like that, you're right. We have a innocent person whose natural growth is going to cause a negative health outcome or death for his mother. So what should we do in those cases? There is where I would say we would apply the principle of double effect. And the ethicists and theologians might go at it in different ways. A lot of them are only willing to apply double effect in this case to say, well, we're removing the damaged section of the fallopian tube, or, you know, we're attacking cancer cells in the uterus and the child might die unintentionally. But you cannot directly kill the child. However, in the schizophrenic case, I would say, well, yeah, if someone is hallucinating, is about to kill you, it's tragic. You have the right to use lethal force to defend yourself, even in that kind of a tragic circumstance. However, I don't believe you do not have the right to kill someone just to save your own life. So if I'm sitting in a boat that's sinking with somebody else, I pick on Cy too much. I'll sit with someone named Guy.
Someone named Guy. Okay.
I don't want to include Cy in this example, because it's even crueler than killing him. Guy and I are sitting in the boat, and Guy is a very corpulent individual who is causing the boat to sink. So if I push Guy over the boat, I'll save my own life, so the boat will still remain afloat. But I think that that's wrong. You can't kill another person just to save your own life, but you can act against someone that's directly attacking you. Even if they're not morally culpable. And it's possible a moral theologian could apply that reasoning to, let's say, a case of ectopic pregnancy. But it's possible one might be able to apply it in that way. I think Minnesota theologians would apply double effect reasoning in that case. So I would say with your argument that it does not apply in 99% of abortion cases because the threat is not immediate, and that you could maybe apply it in cases where a person's life is in danger, but we'd have to tease out the moral principles and make sure that we get it right. But that's what I would just think of for right now. But I'm grateful you called in, and yeah, hope to hear from you again.
Thanks, Tom. You can probably hear the music. It's Persuasive Pro-Life this hour. If you'd like to be more persuasive in your pro-life arguments, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. And if you'd like to dispute pro-life arguments, you're also welcome, 888-318-7884.
Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com. Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Tomorrow on Mortal Life, the life you were meant to live.
We'll look at how the theology of the body can help you live a more abundant life.
That's tomorrow on Mortal Life, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 Central on EWTN Radio.
Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live on this Martin Luther King Day here in the United States. Hope it's a good day for you. Hope you got the day off, unlike us. But you know why? We get a lot of the, like August 15th, we won't be here, you know, because that's the Feast of the Assumption, right? I got that right? The Feast of the Assumption. And so we get a lot of those holy days off. So we have to kind of, you know, come in and do some work some of the time. So we're here on a few of the holidays as well. And happy to be here. I'm only fooling around. 888-318-7884 is our number. It's Persuasive Pro-Life. Trent Horn is our guest.
You know,
go ahead, Trent.
Sorry, Cy. I was just thinking it would just be funny if the federal government said, the obligation to celebrate this holiday is suspended this year, so you can go to work or something, like your employer doesn't have to, you know, give you the day off and just did that, or it's too inconvenient to have it on a Monday. We're gonna move it over to Sunday.
Like the bishops do with the holy days of obligation.
Right.
Yeah. We're observing the Monday of Martin Luther King Day on Sunday this year. That would be such
on
a
Sunday. Rip-off. So you can report to work on Monday.
Yeah. I'm one of those who actually believes we need more holidays. I think we need more federal holidays.
More federal holidays.
Yeah.
Well, what do we come up with new ones, or do we, canonize an existing holiday like Administrative Assistance Day or Arbor Day, or, you know,
I'm not so sure about it. What are you just starting with the A's and you're going to work your way through?
Let them all get a chance.
I think we need a day for the original people of that were on this land before the Europeans got here. I don't know what you would call it. You know, it may be like Native Peoples Day or Original Peoples Day or First Nations Day. That's what they call it up in Canada. I think we need a day like that.
Well, I think we kind of have that. A lot of people want to rename Columbus Day that. So
no, but that's dumb. Like, why rename Columbus Day? It's Columbus Day already. Why are you picking on the Italians?
You're saying, look, why don't if you just another holiday? We got plenty of days to spare.
That's what I say. Another holiday. First of all, I think Columbus Day should be a more solid holiday because we're a little shaky on it now, and we need to firm that up. Let's all take that day off, and then we need a separate day or days for Native American people. Like, I don't think it should be like, oh, we're going to give you a day, but it'll be a day we're taking off for Columbus, but you guys can have it. You know, I don't think that's, let's have their own day.
If it's another holiday, I will rarely oppose it to you, Cy. So I'm okay with that.
All right. Tony in Des Moines, Iowa, listening on 94.5 FM. Go ahead, Tony, with your question for Trent.
Hi. So I saw a pro-choice person once argue that abortion is okay up until the point when the soul enters the child's body. Uh-huh. They cited some scripture passage, which I don't have handy, when they made this argument. So I guess maybe you can address it or
yeah.
Is there something that says that
I have in a note here, does Ecclesiastes 5 ring a bell? As you do not know how the spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, so you do not know the work of God who makes everything. Maybe that's
possibly
it.
Possibly that was it. Possibly.
Sure. And there are other verses that some pro-choice advocates will appeal to try to say that abortion is justified because we don't know when the soul enters the body. I have a few thoughts on that argument. First, I would really press them to say, all right, you're saying it's okay to kill a living human being in the womb because we don't know if that human being has an immortal soul. By that logic, then, why couldn't we make it legal to kill any human being? Because I would say to them, how do you know any human being has an immortal soul? You can't scientifically prove when someone has a soul. There's no soul measuring device or anything like that. So this argument would justify killing any human being. Now, they might say, well, you're talking to me. You're rational. So clearly you have a rational soul, and that's how I know you have a soul. Okay, what about an infant? How do you know an infant has an immortal soul? How do you know that? Otherwise, this argument would justify infanticide. If the person says, well, the infant's growing and it's moving, so it clearly has a soul. Well, by that logic, from conception, the child is growing, is developing, is moving. So this argument would justify killing any human being, though it would definitely justify infanticide as well, and possibly the killing of any human being, because we can't really answer that question. So the church's teaching on this issue does not rest on a definitive teaching of when the soul enters the body. The 1974 Declaration on Procured Abortion from the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, it talks about abortion being wrong because we know empirically that the unborn from conception onward are individual human beings or human organisms. A human life is present. That human life ought to be respected. So we may not know the exact moment the soul enters the body. Because, you know, conception is not a moment. It's a process, a 24-hour process. However, we can say, I think a lot of theologians, though, would say that ensoulment makes sense, that the soul is what makes your body a living body rather than a dead body. It's the principle of life in the body. So what makes sense, then, is that the soul enters the body when you have a living body, and you have a living body once conception has been successfully completed. So at some point during the process of fertilization, when sperm and egg come together to create a new human organism. So I would just say that this argument, it would also justify infanticide. It oversteps what the opposition to abortion is rooted in, which would be in the biological humanity of the unborn child. So I find it interesting that a lot of people try to say that pro-life is nothing but a religious issue and people want to impose their religious views. But the only people I ever hear talking about whether an unborn child has a soul are, which is a religious concept, are pro-choice people. They're pro-choice people who want to justify abortion. So I find that to be kind of ironic in that respect. So is that a helpful start, at least on that particular argument?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Great.
Good. Tom, thank you very, very much. Appreciate the call. The number is 888-318-7884. It's Persuasive Pro-Life this hour. If you got a question about how to be more persuasive as a pro-life person, you're welcome to call. Tara's in Lincoln, Nebraska, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio. Tara, go ahead with your question for Trent.
Hi.
Hi, Tara.
Hi, guys. Okay, so as my husband and I are on our own fertility journey, I just think it's amazing that, you know, you can follow a follicle, like, all the way through ovulation. And
sure.
I also feel like in this day and age, maybe the truth can be a little bit inverted. So where I get stuck in being persuasive pro-life is, you know, science has evolved so much in over the decades since Roe versus Wade. So we know there's a heartbeat at, let's just say, 6 weeks, or we know that, you know, conception starts, or this is the starting point.
Right.
Or that, you know, we can't take an egg from, or like a, you know, if we're hiking, we couldn't take an egg, we could get arrested for that. I just get really stuck. I almost feel like the conversation is like, as a human race, okay, so now we're just deciding, like, at what point is it morally acceptable to end this life? Like you're saying, it's organisms or, I just get really stuck in that. Like, isn't the choice to have intercourse or to make the baby, right? Or that's the whole point of contraception and all of these ads and, you know, everything for contraception, or just IVF. Like, look, that's the moment that your parents and the family or people get so excited. I just get so stuck of like, well, this is the truth.
Right.
So...
I guess I don't know what my question is. I just don't want to give it.
You just want to share that you're stuck. Maybe Trent can get you unstuck.
Yeah,
I don't know. Trent, go ahead.
What do we say to people? And yeah, I wouldn't... Tara, I understand it's frustrating to say, okay, we have this evidence. Why won't people listen? And I think many people are heavily invested in abortion being moral and legal because it is a way out for those who want to choose to have sexual relations but not joyfully receive the human being that could be the result of those sexual relations. So people will go through all kinds of mental gymnastics, contortions, outright denials, barbaric attitudes, just to keep abortion legal and moral. So it's difficult, but I believe we can be persuasive in this regard. And so I think we need to assertively and graciously engage those who disagree with us on the issue. We always have to keep the focus on one question: what are the unborn? And then ask them what are the unborn? Are they human or not? How do you know that they're human or not? If they're not human, how do you know that? Where's your evidence? Like, really put them on the defense here. Or if they say, yeah, it is human, but I don't care, call out the barbarism and the grotesqueness of their worldview. So I believe people can be called out even if they're having a, if you can do so in a gracious way, but one still must point out the repugnance in other people's views. It just takes a lot of time to walk the wire between being, you know, gracious about it and driving home the point of what's wrong with what they believe, usually by asking questions and getting them to articulate the hard truths. Like I might say, so you think the unborn's a baby, it's a human being, but abortion should still be okay. What do you call it when one human being can treat another human being however they want to? Might say slavery. I'm like, hey, you said it. I didn't. When it comes to the heartbeat, I think that can be what you said reminds me a little bit of a quote from pro-choice feminist Naomi Wolf. And she talks about the importance of honesty, and she actually chides fellow feminists for not being honest and trying to shut down discussion about abortion. She's pro-choice, but here's what she writes. It's really interesting. Feminism at its best is based on what is simply true. And she goes on, while pro-lifers have been dishonest, you know, with some pictures, many of the photographs of abortions are in fact photographs of actual abortions. Those footprints are in fact the footprints of a 10-week-old fetus. The pro-life slogan, abortion stops a beating heart, is incontrovertibly true. While images of violent fetal death work magnificently for pro-lifers as political polemic, the pictures are not polemical in themselves. They are biological facts. We know this. So I think that sometimes you have to just put the facts out there and pray that a person's heart will not be hardened and that they'll be open to hearing that. But what I'd like to do for you is I'd like to send you a copy of registering. I'm sure we could figure this out. Either get you Persuasive Pro-Life, or I'd love to sign you up for my new course at the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics. I have a course called Arguing About Abortion that you can check out there. So definitely give us your email address. I'd like to get you either Persuasive Pro-Life or our new CASA course, Arguing Against Abortion. And I hope it does tremendous good for you. But thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks, Tara. We got to take a break, so we'll leave it there. But since Trent just mentioned it, I'll mention to other folks, and I hope you do get it for free from Trent. But right now, we've got a deal on the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics course, Arguing Against Abortion. The whole course is just $15 right now when you put in the promo code LIFE22 when you check out. Get the whole course, Arguing Against Abortion, at the School of Apologetics for just $15. That's a 60% savings right now if you put in the promo code LIFE22 when you check out at shop.catholic.com.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
EWTN Radio is growing. Are you an experienced radio producer looking for an opportunity to help forward Mother Angelica's mission of evangelization? We need a passionate, multi-skilled, talented professional who can manage all aspects of producing world-class radio programming. You could be the newest member of the EWTN Radio family. If this is you or someone you know, email a resume and cover letter, including salary requirements, to humanresources@EWTN.com.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn, our guest this hour. Next hour, Dr. Italy, Dr. Marcellino D'Ambrosio will be here with us. And we're going to talk about friendship with Jesus. If you'd like a little help with your friendship with Jesus, you'd like to help invite others to friendship with Jesus, perfect hour for you. 888-318-7884. We're going out to Tom in Omaha, Nebraska, listening on KVSS. That is Spirit Catholic Radio. Tom, we're glad to have you. Go ahead with your question for Trent. What happened,
Hello?
Tom? Hi, Tom.
Hello. Yes, I can barely hear you.
I'm sorry to hear that. But we can hear you, so go ahead with your question.
Okay, my question is this. Do all unborn, all aborted babies go to heaven?
We do not have the church does not have a definitive teaching on the fate of, the fate of unbaptized people. So there is no definitive teaching to say that all unbaptized persons, whether they're adults or their children or those who are not yet born, there's no definitive teaching to say, oh, well, they all go to heaven or they all go to hell. The church has not answered that question. So focusing specifically, now the church has said we can have a high degree of confidence of certain unbaptized people going to heaven, such as those, you know, who are catechumenates, for example. They have a, we often say that they have a baptism of desire. So they desire to go to heaven. They wanted to be baptized. They got hit by a bus or something happened to them. They died before receiving baptism. They can still, the graces of baptism are still conferred upon them. Or unbaptized people who are martyred for the faith are generally believed they go to heaven because they're martyrs and they receive a baptism of blood. So those would be the exceptions, because in general, there isn't a definitive teaching. The church teaches it is possible for those who are not baptized to go to heaven. Paragraph 1257 of the Catechism says that salvation is bound to the sacraments, especially baptism, but God is not bound by the sacraments. He can save whoever he wants. So what happens to children who die prior to being born, either through miscarriage or through abortion? The answer is we don't have certainty. There have been different views on this throughout the church's history. One predominant view throughout church history was the idea that unbaptized children go to neither heaven nor hell, but they go to a place in between where they experience natural happiness forever. That would be called limbo. So that was a common view throughout church history. However, there has been more discussion among theologians and an openness towards the idea that the same God who said, "Let the children come to me," earnestly desires the salvation of all children who, you know, or, you know, who could not have died before they could have ever accepted Jesus. A long document on this, but a very good one, is by the International Theological Commission. It's called The Hope of Salvation for Infants Who Die Without Being Baptized. So I will just give you the short summary answer after all that preamble. We cannot say unbaptized babies definitely go to heaven because God has not revealed that to us. We should pray for them just like we pray for all the deceased. However, we can have a well-grounded hope that God desires the salvation of these children. And so we should have a hope, a well-grounded one. We should continue to pray for the deceased. And we will know the ultimate answer to that question upon the other side of the veil. But our inability to have 100% certainty now should not take away our peace, because the God we love, who is all merciful, all loving, all powerful, he will never do anything that is unjust. And we will see that his just decree has been carried out, and we will be at peace with what happens to those who have died without baptism. So I hope that's helpful, and I'm grateful you called in.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it very, very much. We're heading over to Oregon, or up to Oregon. Isaac in Hillsboro, Oregon, listening on 88.3 FM. You are up next, Isaac. Go ahead with your question for Trent Horn.
Okay, so my question is, with all the like depression and suicide and stuff going on right now, how do you explain to somebody who doesn't think that their own life has value that all life has value?
So how do you, someone who doesn't think their life has value, you're talking about somebody who is like actually suicidal?
Yeah.
Or someone who's just kind of jaded.
Kind of both. Like just, mm-hmm. you know, somebody who doesn't think that their own life has value, why would they be against abortion if they didn't really value their own life from the first place?
Yeah, that would be a sad case to have some. It's sad if someone is so depressed they don't see value in their own life. So I guess there's different ways you can engage this person. And I think there's a bigger conversation here than just abortion that needs to be broached. Because you could say, at least when it comes to abortion, you know, do you think even if you don't see value in your life, are there things... Sorry, if you don't see value in your life, do you think it should be illegal to kill you? Like, if somebody tried to kill you, would you fight them? You know, would you want other people to help you? Would you want the state to take your side and protect you? So I might say, even if you are kind of depressed or, you know, you're nihilistic about life, if you would want the right to life for yourself to protect your life, don't you think other people ought to have that right as well? So you might be able to appeal to the person's consistency in that regard. Also, you can maybe point out that, you know, I think that you should get to the root to show, hey, this person, they don't value their own life. how could we evangelize someone? Why would they care about eternal life if they don't even care about temporal life or this life? To encourage them to say, look, you might not think your life has value and you may not believe me, but I'm just going to tell you this. If God did not want you to exist, you would not be here. There is a God had a reason for you and has a plan for you. Jeremiah 1:5, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you, a prophet to the nations. I anointed you. Like, I'm probably butchering that right there. You know, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you, the plan, you know, the plans that I have for you, God says. To tell this person, look, you're not an accident. That you, if God didn't want you here, you wouldn't be here. You would have suffered the same fate as all the other sperm and egg that never turned, that never fertilized and become a human being, you know? But you are here because God wanted you to be here. Because God wants you to be here, he wants you to spend eternal life with him. He wants you to have supreme happiness. This you were not, this life was, you were not made for this life only. Maybe that's why you're so nihilistic. You can't find supreme happiness in this life. You were made for something else. You see there's a desire, a value there, something that is missing. So I might take this as an opportunity to help that person become pro-life. That is important. But before they can be pro-life for others, they have to be pro-life for themselves. And there you might need to start at the basics, the kerygma, John 3:16. You know, for God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son. Whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. You might need to start there with that person and just let them know that you care about them, that you're glad they exist, and never let anyone tell them otherwise. So I will say that this is, Isaac, this is one of the hardest questions, because it's not like, oh, here's the fallacy of that argument. It's just getting somebody out of an existential funk. That's not really my area of expertise, but those are some thoughts that I have that might be helpful there. And I hope they're helpful for you. So
thanks, Isaac.
Thanks.
I'm going to try to keep moving because we got a few more on the line. I'd like to get to them. Nate in Jacksonville, Florida, watching on YouTube. You're up next, Nate. Go ahead with your question.
Hey, Si and Trent. Thanks for taking my call.
Happy to, Nate.
So I had a friend who recently talked to me about abortion. So she was previously pro-life, but changed her position to pro-choice based off of the fact that she, you know, could have been pregnant. And I didn't do a very good job of kind of reasoning with her. So kind of two questions. Yeah. How do you combat the kind of rape, incest, in my case, argument? And then how do you keep your emotions in check?
It's hard. The second one's harder than the first. It just takes a lot of practice. The more conversations you have, the easier it gets. I've been watching a popular show online about warring karate dojos. And I'm not going to mention it because it's probably be rated morally offensive by the USCCB, but it's a good show. And it's like with karate, you know, the moves become more natural the more you do them. You have to practice. And you develop muscle memory. They become more second nature. And that's the same thing with having these conversations about abortion. The more you do it, the easier it becomes. When you ask questions, it makes it easier to keep the conversation in check and really put the focus on that person without feeling the heat of the conversation. So I think that's important. But when it comes to these hard cases, I think there you can ask a question to say, can I ask you a question? Do you think abortion, what do you think about abortion for lots of other cases, like somebody who has casual sex and doesn't care and then gets abortions? Do you think that's wrong? Why do you think it's wrong? Well, because it's a human being. They can't kill people. Okay, but how is it? Is it not a human being in the other cases that you are okay with? That there you can capitalize on that situation to say to that person, look, it sounds like you're saying abortions are okay sometimes, but not others. But don't you think you should be consistent? Like they're either all okay or they're not all okay, depending on whether the unborn child is a human being or not. Nate, stay on the line. I'd love to give you Persuasive Pro-Life or registration in my course, Arguing Against Abortion, at the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics. The rest of our listeners, go to schoolofapologetics.com. Check out that course and many others.
And put in the promo code LIFE22. When you check out, you get a deal on it. LIFE22. Trent Horn, thank you very much. Happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day to you as well, Si.
Hope you have a good week. Coming up next, Dr. Marcellino D'Ambrosio, one of our very favorites. You'll be happy if you hang around. He just makes you happy when you hear him talk. He's going to talk about friendship with Jesus. So hang out. Give us a call if you got a question about friendship with Jesus. 888-318-7884.